Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And happy Throwback Thursday.
Huzzah.
Goodbye. You're not enthused. Why aren't you enthused?
I am over-enthused. I'm trying to contain myself.
I can tell. Are you okay? You're perspiring.
Oh, yeah.
A
no,
bit.
I'm good. I'm okay.
Is it the heater?
No, it's good. It's show tunes, Rob.
Do show tunes make you hot?
Yeah.
Unlike, what's that song from Victor Victoria? Paris makes me horny.
Oh!
Who are we
that
talking
was my
to?
Julie Andrews at the end of Le Jazz Hot.
Let's keep
For
it.
For the 8 people who know what I'm talking about.
Le Jazz.
You're welcome.
Hot.
Sorry, I did it twice.
That's okay. You know, comedy comes in threes.
Yeah, so just wait for this at the end of this episode. There it is.
Hello.
Oh, how are you?
I'm good. I'm real good. What?
I don't know. I just looked at you like, ugh.
No. It's just been a long day.
Yes.
Well, it's been a long day.
Oh, Frank Lesser.
What about him?
Just like.
He ain't here.
No, but he wrote like 7 shows. I mean, like when you think about the output of, you know, the Gershwins, Jerome Kern, like they're knocking out songs right and left.
Well,
Frank Lesser was like, "Nah, I'm gonna take about 2 years for each show. I'm that's about like, and if you know, maybe more than that."
Yeah, but he was also a big composer in Hollywood. The
true,
people forget.
That's right.
So I think
you're
he was
right.
also doing a lot of
you're
work
right.
out there
busy.
As well.
But he was a real. I mean, when you really think of like book music lyrics, he was a workhorse.
I'm trying to think. He was pretty because 48 was Where's Charlie?
Where's Charlie?
And then we had Guys and Dolls in 51.
Yeah, 51.
And then Most Happy.
Most Happy.
The Green Willow.
I love Green Willow.
You love Green Willow.
How to Succeed in
How
Business.
How to Succeed. And then he was going to do that Senor Discretion himself, and then
yes,
he passed.
Yes, and Pleasures and Palaces.
Oh, Pleasures and Palaces was right. in there, which never came in, yeah.
You know, but it's really wild that he just, he's the Adam Gettle of the 60s, 70s.
Oh, I actually like that. If you can get your hands on the demo of Pleasures and Palaces, it's really fun.
That I've seen a record of it, yeah.
I think I've shown it to you.
Oh, I think that
thunder.
Is correct.
And lightning.
Thank
little
you.
Phyllis Newman there for you.
That
That's
nice.
What she sings. And the title song, I think, is very pretty.
I love Frank Lesser.
Do you, how much?
Like, a lot. Enough that I like Green Willow.
But you know what's so funny? Very controversial. He always comes up during Christmas time because he wrote, Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Right. You know, this Christmas, in light of this climate, and I do not want to get in this conversation, but I will if I have to.
With me or just
with anybody? But I did read a really interesting article that tried to give Baby It's Cold Outside the context with which it was written in the 40s, that we're using our contemporary sensibilities to impose on it the language that they used back then, and we are being like, well, what the heck, this is, but a lot of the meaning that we take for double entendre really wasn't meant that way. I mean, in the time, you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No, I'm not. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm listening.
Yeah, no, it was a very interesting argument that, like, it's not as racy as it seems. That, like, people really were worried about what your aunt was going to say about the fact that you were not home at a certain time, and it was just a different time that a lot of that language is not meant to be, like, the rape anthem that we like to joke about.
That's interesting. I always assumed, I never even thought of that. What I always assumed people got upset about was the say, what's in this drink line that he had slipped or something.
Right. And even that, there's a great thing about that, that there's the alcohol was not as potent as it was. You know, that
some people interpret it as, boy, he's made
the
drink very strong.
Right, totally.
Or some of it interprets there's like a Mickey in it. There's something Rohypnol to make it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, no, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It's very interesting.
It's amazing that one song can bring up so much, but it's
so he's still with
still
us
being done
for better or worse.
Who?
Frank Lesser.
Oh, yes. He's still alive.
No. What I meant is
his work is still with us. Yes.
His work is still
with us.
And in the popular conscious, not just in the musical theater realm.
Yeah, no,
the
yeah.
It's still
no, it's very,
a pretty
it's
contested
potent.
Debate. We were talking about that even before we went on Jeopardy. Potent potables for 100. We were talking about that even before we went on the air that, you know, there's this, you know, do you erase the past when you remove those songs? Or we were talking,
right.
There's a thing right now that they want to take down the statue in Columbus Circle,
right.
And rename it because of how Columbus treated the Native Americans. And so that's also a big debate right now, if that's going to happen or not. Beyond the purview of this podcast.
What's never stopped us before.
But you know what's interesting? I think we all, when we talk about like political correctness in theater and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, I think if you want to listen to our episode with Kathleen Marshall, because I think she had talked about that a lot in terms of approaching things like
yeah.
The Pajama Game,
yes,
where
indeed.
Originally the character was supposed to be a full-figured woman.
Oh, and he was like a womanizer. Wasn't he like, no...
Yeah, the
they were like poking fun.
Yeah, the idea was that the only woman he could get was the woman who didn't look like everybody else, and so why she changed that for the revival and stuff like that. So it's interesting. I mean, when does something become distracting, and when does it become we're erasing history?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a very, very thin line. There's so many musicals that her Babes in Arms story that she told, which was originally a number for the Nicholas Brothers, and you want to do the show. And there's this one number that just happens to...
It's like that part in Holiday Inn when you watch the movie and then all of a sudden it's like so good. And then you're like, oh, why has there got to be a blackface scene?
Or all those Mickey and Judy movies where like
right.
At the end you're like, oh my God, they're all in black... Excuse
right.
me, blackface.
That's how they were going to perform it.
But they were doing blackface up on like variety shows up until the 60s.
Yeah.
Until people were like,
guys, can you really do this? Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously we can't do that today.
Yeah.
I read... such an interesting article years ago, and I thought, don't yawn. I thought, Kevin, you can tell you don't have to stifle the yawn.
No, I
you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Cough it up. I always thought this would make such an interesting musical or movie, all right? I read this article about 15 years ago. The state of Florida funded artists to go to community centers and perform for the people living in senior living.
Mm.
And so they would sing like songs of their era and generation.
Right.
And there was a guy, I can't remember his name, who was in his 80s, but he was an Al Jolson imitator.
Oh my gosh.
So he would go and put on blackface and do Al Jolson.
Yeah.
And from him and for the people he was performing for, it was perfectly acceptable. This was the entertainment of their youth.
That was an entertainment that they used back then.
And then people started complaining to the state of Florida going,
yeah,
you're paying for somebody to do blackface. This is inappropriate. And then the argument was, well, he's performing a media that they would have been interested in. They would have. So I don't know. I always thought that would be a fascinating play. Like, here's a man whose only artistic credit is performing this dying controversial art form. I don't know. I think there's some sort of story
Rob.
And I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to take it and run with it, just send me the royalties.
That's fascinating.
Or donate to Patreon.
Wow.
Sorry.
No, that's good.
Sorry. I just thought that
plugging
was...
plugging in.
Isn't that fascinating, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was his thing. He was Al Jolson. And the senior home audiences loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed a lot of African Americans that were living in the senior home, and they had no problem with it. So, I don't know. I find it so interesting.
Right. That part of history, too.
I just find
it
so... such a fascinating part. Everyone can have their own opinion on it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm just saying that I think it's a really fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
That's it. That was my favorite thing.
What is your favorite thing today?
Oh, it's a musical.
Okay.
We haven't covered this one before.
Oh.
Which kind of surprises me because I was kind of like, oh, we must have done this at some point, and we haven't. We're going to go to the 1984 Broadway musical theater season.
Oh, my. Gosh, I just saw Tumbleweed pass through my brain. Like, there's not much that year.
That's Destry Rides Again. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing Destry Rides Again flash. It was a fertile period, and for a group of composers. It was, if you remember on the Tonys that year, they celebrated the works of Sondheim and Jerry Herman and Kander and Ebb, and they mentioned Maltby and Shire because those were the four folks that were nominated for Best Musical. In fact, the musical that we're talking about today was one of those Best Musical nominees, but it did not win.
Okay.
It is by Kander and Ebb. It features
the rink.
It is the rink. Yeah. We have never talked about the rink.
We haven't.
I've gone through everything. The rink has never been on our list.
Crazy.
I want to go around the rink. The rink. There's nothing to.
Yeah. Ah, ma.
Yeah.
Don't ah, mommy.
Don't ah, mommy.
I mean, don't ah, mommy.
Which
that's
is
the
so
title.
Oh, genius. Just and colored lights.
Oh yeah, of course.
I was sitting on a sand dune in Santa Cruz, or was it Monterey? Well, anyway. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
No, I love that. I was just, because I just remember I played that Ruthie Henschel. We did a benefit a month and a half ago, yeah. And I played, I was like, how do I know that song? She never sung it before, and we did that song, is an incredible song.
Marry me. Give in and marry me.
That's a great song.
Yeah. So for those of you who are not aware, the Rink was a Candor and Ebb star vehicle for Cheetah Rivera.
Uh-huh.
The story was going to tell this woman who ran a roller rink. Mm-hmm. The roller rink was about to be closed down. She had a husband. Husband is no longer in the picture. She had a daughter. The daughter is an adult daughter, no longer in the picture. And it was about what happens the day she's about to close the rink for the last time before the wrecking ball comes. And her daughter, who she had not seen in years, shows up again.
Uh-oh.
And protests and says, we should not be closing this rink. There's so many memories here for me. And the mom is like, well, then where the hell have you been?
Right.
And over the course of two intermissionless hours.
For real?
Yeah. they come to this understanding about their relationship. And then as the show ends, the daughter introduces her mother to her granddaughter because she's had a child all this time.
Surprise!
And it's three generations of women all coming together for peace and moving forward.
And the wrecking ball slowly
And the wrecking ball
in.
Slowly comes
no,
in.
That's
wrecking
amazing.
Ball
I didn't know
played
it was...
by Nell Carter.
And there's a lot of roller skating in this production?
Oh, move over, Starlight Express. Go back under the sea, Little
see
Mermaid.
See ya, Finding Nemo.
We got stuff. So anyway, so Candor and Edward wanted to create a star vehicle for Cheetah Rivera. And Liza Minnelli heard of this. And she said, I will do anything to be in this production.
Wow.
She goes, you don't have to pay me a lot. She goes, you don't have to. Yeah. She goes, I loved working with Cheetah on Chicago when she went in for Chicago. She loved Candor and Ebb. Mm-hmm. She said, I will do anything. She goes, I will have two lines. I just want to be in this. So they put her in as the daughter.
Right.
Now, the daughter is supposed to be an ex-druggie, an ex-hippie, kind of frumpy. And when you think frumpy, you don't think Liza Minnelli.
Mm-mm. You had me until the frumpy part. Sorry.
You think sparkles.
Terrible. Yes.
You think sequins.
Mm-hmm.
You think show business.
I think hits on each of the orchestral hits and like a hum, drum,
Now, people that are objective said that Liza Minnelli's performance in this was really quite good,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't what the audience wanted to see. If you say it's going to be Cheetah Rivera and Liza Minnelli, you don't want two women just yelling at each other for 2 hours about how badly they're like. Yeah. And if you look at
tough.
The original costumes, like Liza Minnelli, her hair is like all gross and stringy, and she's wearing a turtleneck. Like, God, first of all, I want to say this. God bless her.
Yes.
Because it would have been very easy for her to say, I'm going to come in and I'm going to do what I know.
Yeah, do another act. Do another Liza with the Z special. Which she already had done, but yeah.
But to come in and be like, no, I am a serious actress, and I will unglamorize myself for this role. I will do it. So the original show with Candor and Ebb, the book was originally going to be by a guy named Albert Inarritu, who wrote a very famous play called Gemini.
Yes.
He left, and then Terrence McNally took over. And this is the first of the Terrence McNally, Candor and Ebb collaborations,
gotcha.
Of which there's going to be many. So the show opens. It does not get the best reviews. Most people complaining that this is not the Liza Minnelli we really wanted. Plus, it's Liza Minnelli's overshadowing Cheetah Rivera's, you know, just persona-wise. They got along very well, but just persona-wise, that's happening. And Liza Minnelli, unfortunately, gets really, they don't get the best reviews. And it's public knowledge, and everyone knows this, but allegedly she started drinking and drugging again.
She had some habits.
She had to go to Betty Ford. When she left, Stocker Channing took over the role. And this was, you know, pre-West Wing Stocker Channing, pre-House of Blue Leaves Stocker Channing, pre-Six Degrees Stocker Channing. So she's a fine actress, but not like the name people were wanting. And ticket sales tanked. So
wow.
Even though the rink did not have the greatest of times the first time out, the score is absolutely incredible. We've mentioned some of them. Marry Me, which is a great song for guys. Chief Cook and Bottle Washer, which is Chief Cook and Bottle Washer.
Dun, dun, dun. It's a classic Hannah Nebb thing. Dun, dun, dun,
doing
dun,
what some dun, dun, cook dun, and dun, bottle dun, washer dun. Does. That's my favorite.
So what is it lyric.
Doing what some cook and bottle washer does, like no description, like just like that's the lyric. Like I almost feel like Fred Ebb was like, I'm tired. like you know, he was gonna come with a great
you
metaphor.
Yeah.
And he's like, doing what some cook and bottle washer does, great. Everyone happy. Don't Ah Mommy is great. Colored Lights, Blue Crystals, which is another wonderful song from there. But the Company of Men in their lives was only played by six men that were on roller skates.
Yeah.
So that was the ensemble. It was Cheetah Rivera. I was going to say Angela Lansbury. Cheetah Rivera, Liza Minnelli, and six men on roller skates. Who were some of those six men? Scott Ellis.
Oh, my gosh.
Ron Carroll. And Jason Alexander.
Isn't that funny?
Just to mention a few.
He's the one that sang that Marry Me song.
And he sang Marry Me.
Yeah.
We've asked him to be on this podcast, and he said the next time in New York, he's going to be on our podcast.
All right, then.
So we will ask him about the rink.
All
but in
I
want
to do is talk about your show is the musical theater.
Yes.
No, we haven't had to touch the S word.
No. We will not be there. We were only going to talk about Jerome Robbins
That's
Broadway
right.
and the rink. And then this, I think, is really cool, and then we're going to move on. At the end of the show, the set the whole time was this roller rink. That was the set of the whole show, this roller rink. And at the end of the show, as the three generations climbed the stairs to the exit, the entire set, except the stairway, went up into the flies.
Wait, what?
So it was just the three women silhouetted against a sunset. So this set, which had been on stage for 2 hours, it
wow.
never moved, just like flew up into the flies.
Originally, Pippin.
Full on Pippin. The idea originally was that the show was going to be off-Broadway.
Huh.
And I think it probably would have been great off-Broadway, but because of the star salaries, it could not be an off-Broadway house. If you want to hear more about the rink, listen to our episode with Sue Frost, because Sue worked on that show.
Right.
And she had some good stories about it, too. So listen to The Rink, Liza and Cheetah. There's a British version. Don't listen to that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did a British version. And I'm always surprised that it hasn't come back either at Encores or Mufti
version,
or 54,
yeah.
you know, with, you know, Patti LuPone. And
though just the title alone is dated.
Yeah.
We don't have that.
Yeah, we don't have
we
a
We don't
rink
even
anymore.
Know what that means
like
anymore.
What is a rink?
I grew up going to one, but that was I'm the last of that generation that really
Yeah,
was.
it's a whole different
you know?
It's a whole
that
different thing.
The idea of going someplace and skating and
But take a listen to the score because
yeah.
it really is something
it's cantered up.
Something incredible. So that's mine, it's the rink. We've never covered it. Kevin
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Who's yours?
Well, I have a person. This is a person that I would have loved to have talked to on our show, but we've lost him far too a while ago. And I first became aware of him because of, I'm going to say it was The Nervous Set. The 1959 Beatnik musical, if you will.
Musical.
It really is. It is the musical that is like, if you look up, you know, Jack Kerouac, you would find this musical. I mean, like, it is of its era. The, hey, man, like, what's going on? I mean, it's very, like, Cool Cats, you know.
Groovy.
And this guy was in it. He also was married to one of the most famous costume designers that ever graced Broadway. He was in.
Is it Tom Aldrich?
It is. Good job.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
I just want to just talk about Tom just for a couple minutes. Tom Aldridge, of course, younger listeners, you may know him because of, well, Into the Woods. He was the narrator, and everyone knows Once Upon a Time, and you just know his voice. He was just notorious. Yeah. I mean, he's just like, but he, this is a man who was nominated for 5 Tony nominations. He was in plays and musicals. He was married to Tony Aldridge, who was like, you know, goddess costume yes. designer. But he started his career in 1959 in The Nervous Set. He was in Where's Charlie? He was in Rex in 1976. He was in On Golden Pond, which got him a Tony nom. He's in Little Foxes with Elizabeth Taylor. And then, of course, Into the Woods. Most recently, he was in 12 Angry Men on Broadway in 2005 before he passed away a couple years after that. He won the Emmy Award. He was in tons of character television stuff, tons of TV. Yeah. And he cut his teeth in the 60s with Joe Papp at the Delacorte Theater. He did tons and tons of outdoor Shakespeare, all of that. He, you know, is one of those actors that navigated the crossroads that could easily be forgotten because he was a working actor his whole life.
I don't know if we're going to talk about this. They said one of his greatest performances was in this play called Sticks and Bones.
Yes.
Where it was a parody or is a satire on the 1950s, like, wholesome family. But one of the sons had gone to Vietnam and had come back blind. And they said his performance in that was like one of the best performances anyone ever saw. This father whose, like, wholesome idea of the world just crumbles in front of him. They said it was, like, oh, brilliant. Man. I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah, people like that are the, you know, yes, we have our great actors that we get accolades and they've won all the awards, but some of the greatest actors are the ones who didn't get to have all of that.
Yeah.
People like him that, you know, was nominated 5 times, but it just never happened for whatever reason. I think winning doesn't have as much to do about talent, but just has to do with the timing and all of the other political things that go on. But people like him, to me, are the real successes of this business, who were working steadily from a young age, were a part of every single facet of it, and some of the highest profile things as well as the smaller profile things, television, film, theater. He did it all. Did people in New York know who he was? Yeah. But did people in other cities know him? No, probably not. But he made a living and he did it. And to me, that's like a real success in this business. And he would have been the ideal person to have talked to on this podcast.
Oh, I wish we could have had him. I wish we started this.
And that legacy.
Sooner.
And I was truly shocked to find out that he had been married to Tony Aldridge for that long, you know, 60 years until she died.
Yeah, they had a long, she predeceased him. They had a really, really long marriage.
Yeah.
And that performance in Into the Woods is just wonderful.
And we have it preserved.
And it's preserved. And he was the mysterious man, too.
Yes, of course.
He does both. He was in Passion.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't supposed to be in Passion.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they cast someone else. And then that person didn't work out, and they were like, "Hey, do you want to come back?"
Yes, please.
And he's like, "Yes."
Yeah.
But what a great
actor!
Yeah,
I've always been a fan. And when I, you know, The Nervous Set has always been a secret little favorite musical of mine. And every time I hear his voice on there, I always giggle because I think, my goodness, this man has literally been doing this for decades and decades and decades.
May every actor have that career.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. There's just a whole bunch of those journeyman actors that consistently do good work.
Yeah.
Consistently do good work. And they're never going to be above the title.
No.
Or they're never going to be a household name.
Right. But yeah, they should be. At least he was a household name to me growing up because I was aware of his work. But he never had his Sweeney Todd moment. He never had like that. He was definitely in big plays and stuff like that. But it is, you know, part of the mission to keep those people's memory alive as well.
If anyone has any memories of Tom, you know, please share them. Well, Chip Zion mentioned that he was a really lovely guy and enjoyed working with him. But if anyone has any performances that they remember, please, please, please
do share. Yeah.
Because we would love to know more about him and the legacy that he left behind artistically. And when did he pass away? 2012, you said?
Yeah, I think. I'm sorry to have that off.
No, it was a few years ago.
Yeah, no, it was a couple years ago.
Bless his. Oh, I wish we could. There's so many times, Kevin, that I'm like, I wish we could have started this sooner.
I know.
And sat down
I'm glad we did.
Hey, listen, we're getting great stories now. Yeah. So Tom Aldridge is yours.
Yeah.
And mine was The Rink.
Yes, of course.
Kander and Ebbs, The Rink. Tell us who your dream casting is for the revival of The Rink.
It'll be on rollerblades.
They should do that. It should be a skater musical.
It'll actually just be like those little skateboards that are like have like scooters.
Oh yeah, that's what we want. Is Cheetah Rivera on a razor?
Yeah,
going around.
She could do it again. Still, please.
It's either that or Merlin, whichever one she wants to do. She wants to
Merlin.
She can do a revival of Jerry's Girls.
Oh.
Oof.
Ooh.
I said, never mind.
We're going to let that one go.
We're going to let that go. That's for another time, another place. So take a listen to The Rink and then see if you can get yourself some.
Tom Aldridge. Check out.
Tom Aldridge. Yeah. All right. Till next time.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.